This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Millennial Money. This time, I'm serious. My voice has gone thanks to Jeremy.
Are you saying I'm a super spreader? Is that what I am? I'm spreading?
You spread the COVIDness.
Oh, man. It's not COVID.
It's not Rona.
For those out of the loop, in the last episode, Jeremy's voice was out, and he had to whisper the entire time. And yeah, Andre introed imitating Jeremy. But now, the joke's on Andre, because Andre actually, I think, maybe got the same thing. I'm immune. I don't know what it is. Nobody else has it except for you guys.
I know.
You're fine now, you're but immune. Andres.
Jeremy got me sick, yes.
You're immune, knock on wood, until next week's episode, and Graham starts it off, and he's like, yeah, guys, I got to talk quietly now.
Oh, my voice. What is it? So what are you sick with? What is it?
Well, at first, I got it so Friday, and man, it just came out of nowhere. Like, you just feel this, you know how sometimes you know you're going to get sick?
Yeah.
It's like this hot and warm, like hot and cold feeling. And then you're like, something feels weird about my throat. Mm. And then it just progressively gets worse. Mm. That's what happened. And then, yeah, I just had a lot of phlegm and just my voice is gone.
That reminds me of the stock market. It's like it progressively gets worse. It's like there's something wrong here. And then you open up your account and you're like, I'm down another 200,000, another 200,000, another 200,000. It's like, how does it just get worse? It just progressively gets worse.
That's the stocks, true. Jeremy. That's not the...
And I'm like, I'm bankrupt now. Like, what do I do? Okay, so...
Kind of like that.
Yeah, but you took a test, though. Right? Yeah. You took a test to confirm it's not that?
Absolutely not. Really? I did not take a test because I still have my sense of smell and tastes. I think I'm fine.
Yeah.
Wait, I think you're fine,
Andre. You look great. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
We should have lit the candle, though. That's the one thing.
Oh, didn't we do the seance the last time?
We did.
We did the seance for the market to go up, and it did.
And if there's one time we really need to do it now, it's now.
So, yeah. How much are you down today, Jeremy? I'll share my number right after you.
Probably 300.
300.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm down 200,000 today. And that was one of my worst days ever in the account.
Wow. Yeah,
200K. Wow.
Yeah. It's vicious, man.
Not down as much.
And the worst part is, yes, the previous day was awful too. And the previous day before that was awful. It's like when you start having these compounding days, eventually the dollar amount could start getting smaller because your account balance starts getting smaller. So imagine you have $10 million and then you lose 20%, but then you lose 20% of that. And so the dollar amount might not seem as big, but still it's massive in the end. And so, yeah, it's a vicious market. And then Google came out with earnings after the bell. Their stock went down and their earnings were, I would call it an A-. The only thing that was troubling was YouTube numbers.
Mm.
Which is something I know we have talked about.
Explain that, because I'm not up to date on that.
Yeah, so their YouTube numbers were weak, basically in terms of like advertisers spending money. And what we have seen is a lot of folks maybe went away from using YouTube, as the world opened back up. And so YouTube numbers were just kind of not in the best place.
I'm trying to think, why would advertisers cut back on YouTube? Because YouTube objectively is still cheaper than so many of the other resources out there. I think it's a good value. Why would they cut back? They wouldn't know necessarily that numbers are going down. Wouldn't now be a great time for them to spend the money?
It's the amount of ads being played also. So one could be companies cutting an ad budget. So let's say you had $10 million to spend on an ad budget. The Russia-Ukraine situation happened. Maybe you're not getting the ROI on those ads. So you're like, hey, man, we got to cut ad budgets, cut it down to $5 million, right? But not just that. There's a lot less people watching YouTube. And I think everybody in our space understands this, right? Because when everybody was forced to be at home, it's like, what do you do? Watch YouTube. Like, you know?
Yeah. Maybe they're also building up their war chest in anticipation for, you know, deflation.
Who knows? Yeah, it could be. But it's just like if there's, let's say on a given day, 10 million less people watching YouTube than there was in you know, the peak Rona in early 2021, right? That's just less ads to be played through. And so that's less growth that YouTube can show in that sort of situation. And so, that's
I mean, I think it's interesting. Yeah. I've seen immediately, it was basically January 1st, was it, right? Mm-hmm. No, actually, it was December. I remember texting both of you and being like, hey, are your numbers the same as mine? Because my ad rates just went down like 25% out of nowhere. December, which is typically the best. I went back 4 years on that. I'm like, this is the worst December in 4 years during a time that should be doing really well. And that's continued. I mean, it's gotten better since December, but it seemed like there was something in December where advertisers cut back. Coincidentally, if you look at the peak of the market, that coincides with peak ad rates. If you look at it for tech, that was November. And those are the highest rates. So you could almost correlate.
Which one happens first? The ad rate drop or?
I would say probably probably ad rates.
Ad rates drop first.
Yeah, I would say it's around the same time because I think the peak of the market, when you look at the S&P or you look at a lot of the tech stocks, was late November, just around Thanksgiving. And right after Thanksgiving was where I saw ad rates drop. But sometimes you never know. Sense. Sometimes they drop and, you know, the market will drop and they rebound right back up in December. I mean, there's no way to predict that too much, but I found that quite interesting.
That's interesting, yeah.
No, 100%. And Facebook, their stock dropped after hours as well on the back of this news. Because what the view is less people using Facebook and Instagram as well in this whole situation. And the last kind of wild card, and I know we've talked about this before, is TikTok.
Yep.
And how much attention is TikTok taking away from Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube? Is somebody rather just, you know, spending 20 minutes on TikTok instead of spending that 20 minutes on YouTube or Facebook or Instagram?
100%. There's no way that when you open up TikTok, you're spending 5 minutes on there. Like, there's no way not to spend at least 5 minutes on TikTok. And then 100%, that's 10 minutes they're not spending anywhere else.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about Elon buying Twitter now?
Oh, man. Graham, you got an opinion on that?
I said this yesterday with Jack. I'm just a fan of Elon Musk, and it's like whatever he does, I'm rooting for him. I support him. I don't know what he has up his sleeve, but I'm just going to guess. I don't know. But I don't use Twitter that often. I post a few things every now and then, so I don't really care. And it seemed like it's just turned into this like political back and forth of Twitter that I'm not interested in being a part of, but I think if anyone could do it, give it to Elon. But I'm sure he has some sort of agenda with this. It doesn't seem like it's for an investment. Like he's, ooh, it's buy it at 54 and I'll flip it for 70. Like, I think he has some higher purpose and agenda for Twitter. Could it be political? Maybe. Could it be for control of a narrative? Maybe. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised on that either.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and the troubling thing is, I don't know if you guys saw Tesla stock today down over 12% because now the worry is that Elon is either going to have to sell shares to buy Twitter or he's going to have to leverage up more than he's already leveraged up, leverage against Tesla shares. And the issue is he could get a margin call essentially, which is crazy to even think about. Like if Tesla was essentially to fall to certain prices, which is a possibility, right? We've seen Tesla fall 40, 50, 60% many times. If that happens, it could force Elon in a situation where he has to sell off Tesla shares. And imagine there's a scenario where Tesla stock's falling. There's a bunch of worries about Tesla. Then on top of that, Elon's forced to sell, which makes the downward pressure even more.
What's his percentage of ownership, do you know?
Of the entire Tesla company, it's he probably owns, I would say, 15% roughly. I'll look it up. But I mean, Andre, what did you think when you saw the news? Were you surprised by that?
I'm with Graham. I'm rooting for him all the way. But it's so interesting, man. Like the media, the way they talk about it is like, oh, here, like the narrative they're spinning is like, oh, here's a reminder of billionaires controlling your lives. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? That's not that. For me, like, if there is an issue about this, which I really don't think there is, but if there is one, what I really think the issue is that freedom of speech is a responsibility, right? It's like, it's a tool. It empowers people. But with that, it's like a double-edged sword. Yeah. It also empowers maybe influential people that could do bad, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to use that tool responsibly. And I think the bigger question the media should be asking is, like, is society kind of ready for a freedom of speech in the truest sense? Like, if Elon really does make Twitter be this, like, platform for freedom of speech, is that something we really want now? Like, are we ready for it or not? Because it can be abused. It can be, you know, and I think it's a really fine line. So I think that should be the hot take. That should be what's being discussed and not like, oh, billionaires, man, evil people. Like, I don't buy that.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. And by the way, just real quick, Elon owns about 20% roughly of Tesla, not 50%.
So that would be a huge downward momentum if he like had to sell 20% or whatever it is. But I heard that the funding was, who gave him the funding for it?
Morgan Stanley.
Morgan Stanley, right?
Yeah. And not all of it. So I heard, I forget where I heard it from, but a portion was Morgan Stanley, a portion was borrowed, and then another portion was taken from investors. Actually, might have been from one of Kevin's live streams. Mm. But I heard something like that when he covered it. And I think it was between those three.
Mm. So did he have to leverage some of his stocks? Do we know that already?
I believe so. Oh, I believe he borrowed against some, financed some, bring some from investors.
Okay. So it's not going to be the whole 20% share, obviously. It might be like a third of that or something.
Correct.
Yeah.
Which would still be huge.
But you know what's interesting? When you look at this in perspective, what's Elon Musk's net worth?
Oh, probably 200 and, I don't know, 50 billion right now?
250. So him spending 44 billion, what percentage of his net worth is that?
Yeah, that's 20%. Like 20%.
20%.
Yeah.
So it's the equivalent of someone worth $1 million spending 200 grand on like a down payment on something.
Right.
Or someone with, you know, $100,000 spending $20,000 on a car. I mean, like that's what this is with much bigger numbers, obviously.
Yeah. Well, what do you guys think it's going to do for crypto? Do you think it's going to, I feel like crypto is going to be a huge play in this.
Why? How?
Because I think he's going to integrate, whether it's most likely Dogecoin to start, just because I know he loves it, like some kind of a tipping system where you'll be able to use, you know, Dogecoin as an integrated payment system on Twitter to tip people.
It'd be great if he actually integrated with FTX, who's actually the sponsor of today's video. Graham, take it away.
That came out of nowhere. Oh my gosh, Alex. Thank you for bringing it. Jeez. Well, anyway, FTX US is down below in the description. They're one of the largest US regulated cryptocurrency exchanges in the world with more than 6 million users who buy, sell, track, and trade both cryptocurrencies and NFTs all in one place with fees that are up to 85% lower than the top competitors. And their crypto debit card is accepted throughout millions of merchants worldwide. They have no fees on their top Ethereum and Solana collections. And Sam Bankman-Fried has pledged to give away about 99% of his wealth to charities. So if you want to support them, the link is down below in the description. And like I said, you get free crypto on every trade over $10.
Amazing. So, isn't that good? Yeah, make sure you use a referral code MMFTX so you can get that free crypto when you trade $10 or more.
Yeah.
And yeah, so amazing FTX. And Sam, if you need to donate some money, I'll take some, man. Oh, I got to buy the dip.
We could have a fourth on this team with Sam. Sam would come in from the Bahamas. Sam, you're more than welcome. Come sit down with us and chat.
That'd be fun.
That would be a lot of fun.
That would be really cool. Yeah. Amazing.
But so. I don't know if I'm a huge fan of the tipping system. I hate to say it, but how many people tip? I mean, when you look at like YouTube has a tipping system, how many? I rarely ever get a tip, and not that I'm expecting tips.
But do they implement it in a way that's straightforward? I've never seen it.
No, but there's been other platforms that have tipping, and you see some people use it, but they don't feel that obligation to, and then. It's not like you get more recognition. Like on Twitch.
Yeah, I was going to say Twitch. They're probably the best at that.
But
right?
You're paying for advertising. You're advertising your own comment when you donate to someone on Twitch. You see it. Like, same with YouTube live streams. I think it's strategic. You donate $100 and your name gets featured at the top and your comment gets all like, you know, here's your comment. How is that going to be shown on Twitter?
Well, maybe in the comments section, you get like preferential treatment toward the top or something.
Maybe. I mean, see, that's the thing. And this could be abused so quickly. But imagine if that was in the YouTube comment section where you could pay and the highest bidder gets the top comment. I mean, that's probably a horrible idea. But
I don't know.
Saying,
I love the idea. Yeah.
But I'm just saying.
Are we talking about money or are we talking
but
about?
I'm just saying, but what would happen if that top comment is something like defamatory, it's inappropriate, if it's conflicts with a sponsor of the video, if it's an advertiser for a competitor, like I don't know, there's so many things.
It's easy, you just outbid them
with your own money. I don't know. I don't know if a tipping system would be good. I mean, I could see maybe paying a monthly fee for like a boosted profile or something like that, or like maybe more customization. You have a bigger profile picture. I don't know.
And I could also give people access to certain profiles or perhaps tweets and creators. Mm-hmm. Maybe if they're writers, they can publish certain things that would give people access. I think there's a way to monetize it in a way that's tasteful and well implemented. If he has that strategy, but I think it's cool.
Yeah, 100%. You know what's annoying is how many websites, and I know you guys must run into this all the time, when you're doing research for a video or something, how many websites hit you with the paywall now?
Yeah.
It's insane. Like every website I go to is like, you know, try to read an article. Yeah. And it's like, oh, sign up, you know, and it's like, can I just read this? Come on, man.
My favorite is the sign up today for $1 for the next like 6 months. Only $1. I'd say there's a few that I do see the value of. The Wall Street Journal is something that I've paid for, and I love it. Bloomberg is also really good, too.
Barron's is great, I think.
Yeah. There's quite a few that are worth it. But I am blown away at the free sites. They're plastered with ads. It's gotten so bad with banners and like pop-ups, and I click off a pop-up. But now what they've done, they've outsmarted me sometimes, but they put like the little the X on it, but the X is a part of the image, so I click the X, but I've actually clicked the image. Yeah. Doesn't that cost them more money now that I've clicked on it?
No, they should make money from that, because it's no different than like if you click on an ad on YouTube or something like that, like on the sidebar.
But that means that the advertiser's paying more money for you to click on the ad, right? So why would it be in their interest to fake the little black thing to click it?
Because some people might stick around and explore.
Yeah. I've never clicked one of those things to be like, oh wow, this is actually really nice. So let me continue reading. It's like, it's
always... But an older audience might. They'd be like, ooh, what is this?
It's expiring in the next 5 minutes. Let me buy this now.
It's so funny you mentioned that, because right now Corey and I, my girlfriend, is playing, we're playing Champions of Norrath, this game for the PS2. It's like before Skyrim was Skyrim. Okay. And this was before the gaming industry kind of was infected by the virus of pay to play, and just like everything is monetized, like all these like little, what do you call them? Expansion packs. And it's just like, it was such a simple DLCs. Yeah. It's such a simple time where you can just turn on a game and you can just play it from start to finish. You didn't have to buy anything. It's free from ads, and I just love that.
But the PS2, the tough thing about PS2 is like sometimes the disc would get a little dirty, and then it would do the scroll thing, remember? And it's like, is this going to work? And then like sometimes it doesn't work. It's like, no.
I didn't know you gamed.
Oh, dude, PS2. Well, I probably played different games than you. Madden all the time, like college football game, like sports games were my thing.
That was cool.
Oh my gosh, dude. Yeah, all the time. Like that's all I did in high school. Like, you know, like go to school, come home, play like Madden seasons, like crazy franchise mode, all that.
Graham, did you ever play video games growing up?
No. Nintendo 64 was where I started and ended.
Wow. Wait, how is that possible? Like as a kid growing up, you just stopped at this. How is that possible?
Yeah, I got into Reef Aquariums.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So I think I got the N64 when I was like 9 or 10, 8, 9 or 10. GoldenEye.
Did you play Smash Bros?
Oh, yeah, I did. Everyone did.
Yeah.
But GoldenEye was one of my favorite games. Conker's Bad Fur Day. Yep. Banjo-Kazooie. I played 1 and 2. Super Mario 64.
Yep.
Some of the racing games. But yeah, when I was about like 12, 13, I got into aquariums. And that like the aquariums combined with the internet, like going on message boards, took over for me. Instead of video games.
That's so fascinating that was the hobby you discovered. Whereas at that time, when I was around 12 or 13, I discovered magic. And I was like, I saw these online forums where people were like talking about these things called like Hot Shot Cut versus Cobra Cut. And I was like, what does that even mean? And then I just went down this rabbit hole that just never stopped. It's so interesting. Like forums before social media.
I miss those message boards, though.
Me too.
They were awesome. Yeah. And you have like little fire emoji if it's like the really hot topic.
They had emojis back then?
Yeah.
What the heck?
They had I don't know what it was called, but the picture would sometimes change between like two images.
Banner?
No, it wasn't a banner. Like the little emojis. Like they'd have a smiley face, but it'd be like smile, this,
a
smile.
GIF?
It wasn't a GIF. It was like just... The picture would maybe it was a GIF, but it would just like rotate between like two images, so it would make it look like, you know.
And you had to set up your own avatar and like customize everything. And
I had so much fun doing that, the avatar picture.
So that's where you learned the stuff about the aquarium.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Message boards.
Huh. Jeremy, you never kind of got into that.
Message boards?
Yeah.
No, I think in the sixth grade, it was probably like AOL message boards with girls or whatever. Yeah, that's probably about it.
I would love it.
ASL.
I used to be an AOL troll, and I'd sit there with my friends after school. Boy. We'd go on message boards and just like rile people up.
What did you say?
Just like stupid kid stuff when you're like 13, 14 years old. And like I don't want to make it too inappropriate, but I mean,
just get people going.
We would pretend to be people we were not.
Yeah.
People would fall for it.
Yeah.
Gosh, I mean, it sounds, I don't know if I want to say it now, but like basically I'd go into some of the message boards and just lie.
Yeah.
And then we'd see how many of like the private messages would come up who want to like just talk to me.
I think I know what you were doing.
Yeah.
It was just, and you would just take it as far as you could take it before they realized that you're just messing around. But that could sometimes be like 30 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Wow. Yeah, people still do that nowadays. I think on Discord and Reddit and places like that, you know, they still do that type of stuff, that trolling activity, let's call it that.
Did you guys ever play around with MIRC or Merc? I don't know how to pronounce that. It's like those like scripts where you can chat with people. There was like an app for it. It was IRC, yeah. But that was like chat rooms and
like
before chat roulette, all that stuff.
Did you guys get into MySpace
back in the day? Yeah, that was high school MySpace. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, MySpace was how I grew. So I was in a high school band, and we grew our page to like 7,000 fans from MySpace, and we were in high school. And how we did it is I bought a MySpace bot that would basically, I forget what it was. I think I would just send messages to people, and sometimes we'd almost sell out our shows. So what I would do is I'd set a radius of people, like, you know, whatever the minimum was, like 16 or something like that, 14 through like 20. And I would just message everybody, be like, hey, I saw your profile. You might like our music. Would mean a lot to me if you checked it out. By the way, we have a show coming up. Here are the details. Let us know. We'd love to, you know, help you out, get a ticket or like something like that.
Wow.
But we would upload our music to MySpace, and I would get a kick out of like seeing the views on the music, like the listens. Mm-hmm. And I remember when our first song hit 10,000 listens, was like, that was a big deal. But it was all because people would go to the profile and check it out.
You know who would be cool to have on the podcast? MySpace Tom. Do you guys remember him?
I do.
Has he been seen the last 15 years?
Actually, he's traveling. He reached out to me like months and months ago. He's like, hey, I watch your content. And I was like, what? Holy crap.
How do you reach out to you?
Instagram.
Wow.
And
MySpace.
It was MySpace.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I wanna look it up because
he's an investor in one of the home builders here. I don't know if I'm allowed to say, but it's like one of the luxury home builders. Yeah. He's one of the big investors of them. Yeah.
Really?
But yeah. Now he just travels the world, takes amazing photographs. He's like an incredible photographer.
Tom Anderson.
Wow.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. It would be so cool to have him on.
You know what's interesting? I didn't know his last name, so on Instagram I just typed in MySpace Tom.
Yeah.
That's his screen name. He literally got. Because everyone's like MySpace Tom, so he has that username. This is MySpace Tom.
Funny.
That is so smart.
Yeah. I think it's hilarious he still uses the same photo, too, though. Yeah, it's like,
wow, that's so cool. That's legit.
The most random person,
I know. That's legit. I was like, wow. That's crazy.
I know.
It's like my childhood coming right back.
Oh, my gosh.
I would. Yeah.
And whatever happened, like financially, did he get a big cash out? Like, what?
Yeah.
He did.
$500 million, I think.
I think he got to keep like $50 million.
Okay.
Because
there was probably a bunch of VC money in there.
Although I'm just kind of making it up. This is just purely speculative.
So, but he did get some sort of nice cash.
Let's get
out.
Like as many facts as we can wrong. So he feels like the need to come on and correct us.
So you're telling me he's richer than Elon Musk. He got $700 billion. Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah. No, that's.
So News Corp acquired MySpace for $580 million back in 2005.
Yeah.
And then they sold it. Guess how much they sold it for?
For a lot less.
Yeah. So they sold it in 2011. So they held it for 6 years. Mm-hmm. They paid $580 million. How much do you think they sold it for?
For probably under $150 million.
What do you say?
Under $100 billion.
You mean $100 million?
$100 billion.
$100 million.
Sorry, $100 million.
Yeah.
$35 million.
$35 million.
Yeah,
wow.
Sounds about right.
And I believe Justin Timberlake was one of those investors of the $35 million.
Wow.
And their plan at the time, now his net worth is estimated to be $60 million. Who knows?
Right.
But I remember at the time, $580 million was unheard of back at that time.
Yeah,
that
was those before, tech valuations were.
Yeah, Facebook was only a year into it.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold for $580 million.
So technically, Tom timed it perfectly. Like he sold at the peak. I don't think he could have sold it for
I guess so. Yeah, because I stopped using MySpace when I started using Facebook 2006, I think it was. And MySpace was phasing out, but people used MySpace for, music.
Yeah.
And so for the musicians, MySpace was great. But it was the homepage with all the profiles. Like, instead of typing in someone's name or clicking on their account, like you would have everything there.
Yeah.
You know what it was? It was the pokes. the Facebook pokes. You would poke each other.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And I kept going on Facebook because you'd just like, it's just like a little poke your friend. You'd poke back and like, you know, I'm going to poke this person.
Yeah. But I just loved the customizability of MySpace at the time. It was so fun. You could like write scripts.
Yeah, my wife tells me she would spend like hours just setting up her page and then deconstructing and resetting it up.
It was
like,
fun. And I love the chronological order of everything that social media used to be. And now it's just like...
I think it could have been bigger if... I think they probably made a mistake by selling, because the problem is you sell to some, I don't know, news company or whatever. Like in tech, you got to move 100 miles an hour and you need like innovation. If you don't innovate as a tech company, you die, right? And so that was probably a mistake. But also, they were probably a little too soon, because at the internet at that time, still a lot of people were on dial-up, including my parents still had dial-up back then. So if I try to load up MySpace, it took like 6 hours,
right?
You know, and try to go to different pages because people had videos playing and like these things integrated. This is like 2006, I'm thinking, maybe 2007. And so if internet was super fast, I could understand it. Facebook was super simple. And it didn't have all that lag time. Right. And so for people that weren't on high-speed internet at that time, right, Facebook was simple. Because it was like most people just like wrote on your wall or whatever it was back then.
Well, the interesting question is this. Is like, it seems like every social media that's been around, it's been replaced by something else. Mm-hmm. Do you ever fear that could happen with Facebook? Because I know you're a big Facebook investor too.
Well, the thing with Facebook is, so they got three real platforms, but two of them, Facebook still is like... a big beast, especially for the older demographic. And I mean, it's been around for so long now, and it's still, you know, the death of Facebook. It's like, when is it going to come? Like, they're still tearing it up. Instagram still is probably the premier social media. You know, TikTok is great for some entertainment, but it's not really the place you're going to go message people. Like, you just talked about that message. Like, mm-hmm. Where do you do that at? Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram is a better platform for that. TikTok, I'd say, is better for entertainment, but Instagram I use to keep connected with people.
Yep, 100%.
Instagram's kind of replaced my Facebook, where it's like people I want to keep in touch with. Same. I'll message them back and forth. All my messages are there.
Same, but I don't think I hardly use Facebook. Like,
I never go on Facebook. I haven't gone on Facebook in probably, I don't know, seven, eight years.
I feel like that's somewhat of a telling sign that, you know, they may either need to evolve or create something that.
Yeah.
But what was interesting is that Instagram copied the stories from, was it Snapchat?
Mm-hmm.
And that was huge. And usually when someone copies another, it's just bad. Like, that's the sign it's going downhill. But they did it so much better. I left Snapchat. I love Snapchat for Instagram.
Yeah, I left
Instagram.
It too. Yep.
We left at the same time.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. As soon as they made our views dip, we were like, peace out, Snapchat.
Oh, my gosh. My views dropped like 70-80% immediately when they it was the update. Mm-hmm. I left as soon as they did that update. I was out. I hated it.
Wow. Yeah.
I never got into Snapchat.
Okay. It was a good kind of, before we started pushing Instagram, it was like the thing that if you were on social media, like, cause you want somebody to follow you two separate places, like follow me on Snapchat also. And you'd show your little code. I would do that in videos.
I did that too,
But, so Facebook, something they are very successful at is Facebook groups. And I know even my wife's in some of those groups, either vegan groups or in like
and
mom groups and stuff like that.
Huge. Yes. I love their marketplace.
So that's where they've really carved out their niche, where people aren't necessarily going on there for the most part, at least us, but for like entertainment. It's more like, I want to go on there, or because Facebook's cool, because it's not cool. They go on there for the groups and to chat with, you know, different folks, like the mom groups and stuff like that. It's really big.
Facebook's audience is also much older.
Yeah.
Their demographic is way older. And if you watch any of the content that's on Facebook, it's mostly just like skits.
Yeah.
And they're completely like... pre-scripted, they're pre-written, and they're made to look as though it's filmed in the moment, like these crazy moments captured on video. It's all set up, and it makes sense why those videos get so many views, because again, Facebook's a little bit of an older audience. They may not be clued into that, so they watch it thinking like, oh yes, this soldier came home from this, you know, years and sees his girlfriend and whatever. Like, those all these crazy skits, none of them are real.
What?
None of them.
Okay, now I'm being half serious here. Like, because I've seen all of those where it's like the soldier will surprise his wife or something.
Whatever it is.
Was that not real? That seems real to me.
None of them are real.
How do you know that?
Because I used to edit them.
What?
For one of the biggest channels on Facebook.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're like, when the wife's there talking to her family and they're like, turn around, and he's there and it's like, oh, yeah,
no.
What about like, the dog? There's no way the dog ones are
like
fake.
1% of the things you watch there are real.
What about the dog ones? You can't fake the dog ones. Well, where the soldier gets home and the dog's like going crazy.
It's an actor dog.
The dogs are trained to do that.
Exactly. Not the dog ones, but yeah.
That's interesting. I don't know. For Facebook groups, you're right. I'm belonging to a Reef Aquarium Facebook group.
Really?
And it is the best place for locals.
What do you guys discuss?
It's mostly people post corals and fish for sale, or if they have a question. Mm. But it's like a group of a few thousand local aquarium enthusiasts. Mm. And I actually sold my anemone on there, because when it split, I got two of them. And so I put one up for sale, and the guy picked it up, and he watched the channel, which is kind of cool, but he picked it up within an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, and like there's no way that could have been done on Instagram, because it's too big of an audience.
Yeah.
But Facebook, it's like, hey, here's the people, they get notifications for certain things. It's awesome.
Jeremy, what is your thing that like bit you, like, you know, like that bug that bites you when you're really young? Is it, do you have like a hobby or a passion that you're just like obsessed about, and it's so hard to explain?
Hobby or passion that it's so, not really. I was pretty simple. It was sports, and it was video games. For me, when I was a kid.
When did you get interested in investing in stocks and stuff?
That was like 18, 19. Yeah, after I graduated high school.
Okay.
So, but no, I'm trying to think if I had anything. Not really. I was just super passionate about football. I was like so into football. Like I would watch, I would know like the second string players, the third string players of like every NFL team. I could tell you what college they went to, their history, their 40 time. That's just where my passion was in like, you know, video games and like Madden and NCAA and those sorts of things. That was what I was super passionate about.
Are you teaching your kids about investing?
The kids a little bit, they get into a little bit, but I mean, one's too young. The other one's starting to get old enough. But my thing is, I'm trying not to like pressure the kids into anything like that. That's what because that was something my parents never really did. They never like forced anything on me. So I'm going to try to like introduce different things like sports. Like, I know we got my oldest into different sports now and things like that, investing, but I definitely don't want to ever like pressure them like, oh, you gotta invest. You gotta be in the stock market.
It's so
you gotta
funny.
Do this or whatever.
As a kid, you're so impressionable when you see certain things. And I remember showing Jeremy's kid, Enzo, some magic, and he just like fell in love.
Oh, kids, yeah.
And it'll last with them for such a long time. So if he ends up being a magician, I'm sorry.
I know. Yeah, that too. Maybe he is. Yeah. But
would you be supportive of any career they decide to do? Or do you want them to do something practical, makes money?
No, I'd probably be pretty supportive of almost anything. Because I mean, like, you know, I think we touched on this a little bit last episode, but like different people are driven by different things. So, you know, I'm so money centric and so money focused, right? And that's always been where my passion is, like building businesses, investing. And they might not have that. Mm-hmm. You know, they're growing up differently than I grew up. They're going to live a different lifestyle than I lived. And so they're going to be different. And so I'm just going to try to be supportive in what their endeavors are. As long as they pick a career path that involves being a professional athlete or being a musician, outside of those, no, I'm just kidding. Mm-hmm. No, I'm being serious. No, but if you ever watch his kids, no, but no, in all seriousness, that's the way I just want them to be, you know, live like a happy life. Mm-hmm. And whatever success is for them is whatever success is for them.
That's really cool.
So otherwise you put a lot of, you know, if I'm trying to put all that pressure on them, that's a lot of pressure. Like have more money than your dad, be more successful than your dad. You know, like I put the bar up there, man, and I'm going to put it up there a lot more. And that's hard. And going back to athletics, a lot of times somebody likes to say Michael Jordan's kids, right? LeBron James' kids. Everybody expects them to be like their dad, this next great superstar. And that's a tough thing to live up to. Imagine being Michael Jordan, your dad, or LeBron James is your dad. And it's like, you no matter what you do, you're probably never going to be better than them.
Right.
You're never going to do that. Doesn't matter how good you are, because they're just so
insane. And it's
insane.
Crazy because that could create kids that are so timid and shy because they stand in their parents' shadows.
Exactly.
And it's like so difficult to overcome.
Stand in their
that.
Shadow. Yep.
It's like, ah. Oh.
Yeah. And so I think about those sorts of things and I'm like, I definitely don't want my kids personally to like feel like, oh man, I gotta like live up to this expectation of my dad because my dad did this. And you know, that's
now,
just
now
impossible.
What if Enzo, like, let's say turns, you know, 18 and would you guide him in terms of like, if he had a if he had a passion to become, let's say, a DJ, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or would you rather have him go down like the traditional route of academia and maybe like take a normal job? Or would you be supportive of a kind of a career in the arts?
Yeah, I'd be supportive 100%. Yeah, for me, I mean, I never got forced at academics by my parents. And you say that maybe that's a bad thing. That's why I graduated high school with a 2.2 GPA.
Did you really?
Yeah. 2.23 right here, baby.
Probably higher than me.
No way.
No. No way. You graduated with a lower than two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say this, but I failed several classes my senior year, and they wanted me to retake.
I would have never expected that from you.
They wanted
guys.
Me to retake the classes over summer.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was a C and D student until I got to college, and then I was like a 4.0 because it was all business courses and investing and accounting and those sorts of things. But in high school, I was like a C D student. I did the bare minimum to get by, bare minimum. So that was just me. I couldn't pay attention. I don't know. At that time, I just wasn't in that sort of place, and I was just obsessed with football too. And so that's the thing. If you're really obsessed with something, it's hard to be like, pay attention in history class and science class is like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And so anyways, yeah, academics, man, I don't care. Like if they get
And your parents weren't hard on you to be like, oh, you got to do this.
No, wow. They didn't care at all. And so I honestly don't care. Now I can't, my wife, that's the other half. Maybe she'll care. And you know, maybe she'll be like, you get A's and B's. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see just how
Were your parents pretty chill with you getting
it? They were. Yeah. Oh, okay. My mom cared. My dad cared, but he didn't say anything to, or he would. He's like, this is unacceptable. You could do better than this. My mom was a little bit more strict, so I try to hide it from her as much as possible. Like, get an F and I'll just turn that into a B. There were times where you'd have to bring your report card back and it would be like C, C, D, D, you know, F. And then A was always music. But I'd have to get her to sign it, and like sometimes I would just like to sign her for her. It's like seventh grade or whatever.
What about you as a student, Andre?
I'm the exact opposite.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I remember middle school. That was like eighth grade. I got all straight A's except for one B in like something. I went to the mall and I just cried because so afraid to come home. Yeah.
Wow.
That's how bad it was.
Wait, you were afraid to come home?
I was afraid to come home.
Why?
Because my parents were just terrifyingly like strict and expected certain things. But again, I think that's just immigrant upbringing.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know,
it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. We're even talking about this subject. So, we're trying to get, one of the houses ready for sale recently. And so, I came across my old yearbooks, like elementary school, middle school, high school. And I was going through the high school yearbook. And it was interesting. There's these two girls, and I always knew these two girls. And I think they were originally from Russia, but they obviously grew up in the States. But it was interesting. These two girls were incredible at cross country. Like they were the two best cross country runners in Arizona. But they also got like straight A's, perfect grades. Like it was incredible. And they both got full rides. And I was reading the yearbook, and it said, you know, they were talking about like, oh, I'm so proud of, you know, that I got a full ride to, I think one got to University of Wisconsin, the other one ASU.
Oh, I thought you said the other one ate a shoe.
ASU ate a shoe. It's pretty much the same thing.
A shoe.
Yeah. So this is where
it sounded like a shoe.
Yeah. And so this is where the story takes a darker turn.
All right. Oh, God.
One of them committed suicide.
No.
The other got in drugs bad.
No way. What?
Yeah, in college.
Oh, dude. That's so sad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So really sad. But and I just was, I know, and I didn't know they were that focused on academics as well. And so I was thinking, and I'm like, I have no clue what their home life was situation, but I was like, maybe they were like so pressured.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For the grades and the cross country. And so they ended up being in a situation when they finally got to college that they got into drugs and they got into escaping whatever, you know, that pressure was, that overwhelming pressure.
I'm sure my fate would have been very similar, but like, thankfully my parents kind of let go of that craziness, I think at the right time.
Okay.
Yeah. When it's like, okay, cool. I think we set you up and like the rest we can't control.
Yeah.
And I think some parents hold on for too long. And that's when, you know, kids crack and rebel in their own ways that are probably self-destructive.
Oh, that's a tough age.
Yeah. And I would never raise my kids the way that I was raised, even though like I understand the benefit that came from it. I don't think it's healthy. It's not worth it.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you. I mean, at those ages to put that sort of pressure on, it's like, and from an external pressure, it's one thing if your kid wants to put that pressure on themselves. It's another if it's like an external pressure of like, I got to live up to this. You got to do this. I'm sure it could be overwhelming. And so.
Yeah. No, it's so funny. I don't know if we talked about this before, but I remember talking to or just noticing that some of my friends who are in the arts, mm-hmm. a lot of them come from very wealthy parents.
Yes.
Which is so fascinating because mm-hmm. like wealthy parents, like you said, mm-hmm. they kind of encourage their kids to do what they want. Mm-hmm. And even if they fail, they still either have a backup or their parents could help them or whatever mm-hmm. it is. Whereas, you know, people from the middle class, they tend to go down the road that they're told to, which is like the academic route and go get a real job. And that's what they do. Mm-hmm. And they don't take a risk. And I feel like that's why we see a lot of the successful people, whether they're actors, musicians, or whatever it is, come from pretty wealthy families. Mm-hmm. It's not because their wealthy families like bought them their success. I know they worked for mm-hmm. it, but it was that courage that because of their affluent background that allowed them to develop themselves in that way.
Interesting.
Yeah, they could afford to take that risk.
Exactly.
I've seen so many like high school DJs. Everyone from high school to college was like, I want to be a musician or a DJ.
Yeah. Mm.
DJ was very popular because that was like Skrillex was really just like beginning to take off and everyone was like, I'm going to be like a Skrillex. Yeah. But they had the luxury of just, you know, if they didn't make it for 5 years, or they could take the risk and say, hey, I'm going to spend the next 3 years instead of going to college. I'm going to pursue this DJ career. Who's going to pay for that? Mm-hmm. Parents are going to pay for that. $5,000, $4,000 a month, whatever it might be. And if the career doesn't take off, then it's like, well, then I'm going to go back and try something else.
Mm. Right. That's where I draw the line, when I have to financially support you. You
better really? This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Support yourself, yeah.
Oh, all right.
Well, I mean, that's what my parents did. You know, they didn't support me at all. I had to pay for my own to go to community college.
So if Enzo was like, Dad, I want like a DJ equipment set, you would be like, I'm good.
No, I'm not paying for their college if they want to go to college.
Oh,
nothing.
I see.
Wait, but if he wants a DJ set, you're not going to get him a DJ set?
A DJ set?
Yeah, like let's say he's 16 years old. And he's like, I want to be a DJ.
Go make some money and buy it.
Really?
Yeah, 100%. Unless it's like his one gift for the entire year. You don't get any Christmas present. You don't get any birthday present, something like that.
Yeah.
But for me, no, I think you gotta teach men how to be men.
I don't know, because I look at it, I had always wanted a saltwater aquarium, and when I was 12, my dad got me like a little saltwater aquarium, and that's what got me hooked in it.
Oh, but if you didn't
buy it,
how much was that?
I have no clue.
Okay, how much do you estimate something like that cost?
Oh, it was a Christmas, and I'm sure my grandma probably chipped in as well.
Okay.
I don't know. $500, $600.
Okay. So, yeah. I mean, if it's something like that, you can understand. But if it's like, you know, I think you were talking about $3,000 a month or $4,000 a month or whatever.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. DJ equipment, I don't know, like a few $100.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Yeah. That's fine.
So
that's
where
like
do you draw
a gift.
The line?
Yeah. The line is like supporting a lifestyle. Or when we're talking about like $10,000, $20,000, $50,000.
God. I mean, that's, would you get him a car for his 16th birthday or give him one of your.
I'll probably get him some, like, you know, bad car. Yeah. something to get around.
I'll get him some rollerblades.
Get a job. That's what he gets. Job. Yeah.
My first car got like, I think 7 miles per gallon. So
what was it?
Yeah. That was a 1977 Mercedes with no heat, didn't work. The air conditioning didn't work. Driving around. I drove that for 3 summers in the Arizona heat, man.
I'll get him the Investing Snowball by Warren Buffett.
That was a good book. I got that book. Yeah.
Oh gosh. But anyways, yeah, you gotta, I mean, I think at the end of the day, kids, you know, they gravitate toward making their own money, doing their own thing, and they get like, gonna get more independence from that. Mm. You know, than trying to fund a lifestyle. But everybody, you know, parents different. So I can't say some people it's like, I want to pay for my kids' college, right? And so that's fine. Like, do whatever you want. Everybody's going to parent a little different.
I struggle with that sometimes. I don't know if I want to or not because my parents never did. And I remember being very upset with them that they didn't because I remember all my friends had something from their parents.
Yeah, I was.
I was upset at my parents. I was like, how could you guys not prepare for mm-hmm. something? Like,
yeah.
It's kind of your responsibility.
Yeah.
And they just didn't give me anything. And not out of like choice. It was just like circumstance. Like, they didn't save anything. man. Yeah, I struggle with that back and forth. Like, I feel like there's no harm in investing for your kids as long as your kids don't know they're going to inherit something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've actually seen from the Fat Fire subreddit, some kid from a very influential background say that, like, he inherited, I want to say, like, some ungodly amounts of money, like some crazy fortune, but he didn't inherit it until he was like 28 or 30.
Mm-hmm.
So by then he already had this like mindset of I want to work and I want to have my own career. And it was just kind of a bonus. It was a benefit.
Yeah.
It wasn't something he depended on. So yep. I feel like as long as they don't know that there is a safety net, there's no harm in having something there.
Yeah. Ready for them. I had this girlfriend I was dated for, we were together for at least a couple years. And I remember she was set to inherit $30 million on her 35th birthday. She came from, very well-off family, specifically because of the granddad. And, the thing with her is she always seemed very unfocused.
Mm.
Like she didn't really know.
How old was she though?
This was like 18, 19.
But she knew she was going to inherit that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And she already knew she was going to inherit a ton of money, but it never seemed like she necessarily like, I got to go make money now. I got to get this career started. I got to, she never had a part-time job. She also got her college paid for from her family. She never had get a part-time job or anything like that. And I watched that and it's just kind of like, it seems like somebody just kind of going through life, but doesn't really know,
right?
Like when you know you're going to inherit that much money and when all your bills are paid for, you don't have to get a part-time job. You don't have to do anything.
No, for sure. I think if someone knows, especially at a young age, you're robbing your kids of that drive, of that passion to like do, carve their own path.
Yeah.
So as long as they don't know, I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a touchy subject, like how much do you let your kids inherit, someday or whatever.
And I've seen parents do that where they'll hang their, like trust fund over their kid's head and be like, well, you better do what I say or you're not getting the money. And I think that's the worst thing to do.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
So like now you're just going to create resentment in a bitter kid who's just, I would not do that.
I already told my kids, you ain't getting nothing. I'm rich. You ain't rich.
Yeah. That's why you got to donate it all to Team Seas. You got to save the reefs.
Save the reefs. Yeah. That's your favorite charity.
Or you
charity,
just blow it on something like really crazy. Like you get a building with your name on it. Like pay $50 million to get your face on the side of a skyscraper for the next 100 years. Like something stupid.
Or like a college. Yeah. You have like a building at a college.
Wing at a college. Yeah.
I want a building at Stanford. It's like Jeremy LaFave.
Like a Ford GT or something.
I'm just kidding. Oh, that's a good investment.
That's
a great investment. Speaking of good investments, when I said I sold 30-something percent of my Tesla stock?
Yes, now you're looking good.
Made money.
That's
worked
so
out.
Funny.
Worked out in my favor. So now my investment that I bought is significantly cheaper.
Wow.
Well, not significantly, like 15% cheaper.
Yeah. Nice.
So I was having a conversation with Graham yesterday, and here's the deal. I'm going to try to summarize it in less than a minute. My wife and I are having a wedding. Andre and Jeremy were both at the actual marriage. But now we're actually having like a celebration. I don't really want to spend money, but my wife's mom set aside money for her daughter to use for her wedding. And the only stipulation is that we can't use it towards the house. So we can't just like take the money and like spend it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Graham brought a great idea up yesterday and he said, Alex, what if you sell tickets to your wedding? Now hear me out, guys. Hear me out. It's a little different than you guys think, okay? So, obviously, Graham's going to be there. And Andre, I hope you're there. And Jeremy, I hope you're there too. And, what if I set aside like 15 to 20 tickets and I sold them between like 1,000 to 2,000 a piece just to come to the wedding. I don't know, what do you guys think? Not that I'm trying to use your clout or anything, but just for fun.
Gosh, that's so hard for me to answer because I know what I would do, but I don't want to.
What would you do?
Yeah, what would you do?
I wouldn't do that, but why? That's me.
I wouldn't do it either, but that's me. Yeah.
It's just me. I wouldn't presume that other people shouldn't just because I wouldn't.
But here's the thing. Why don't you put this in percentage of your net worth? Because for you guys to sell 15 tickets to a wedding, it's not worth it. But imagine if those tickets were $100,000 each to go to your wedding. Would you not do that? At what price would it make sense? No, you wouldn't do it under $100,000?
No. I wouldn't either.
Why? Really?
Because that's not what the purpose of what you're doing. It's like, because I think we had this discussion, but it wasn't about the wedding. It was about
monetizing everything.
It was about one of your parties. You were like, ooh, I'm going to have a cover charge at my house for $10.
No, and I mean, that was a joke, though. That was a joke.
It was a half joke.
It was a joke. It was a 20%.
You were testing the idea.
Yeah.
I'm never going to do, I'm not going to do that. It was a joke. I just ask people to pick up their own trash. That was it. That's all I want.
It starts with trash. And then it moves to $5 and then $10 and then $100,000.
Yeah. Bring your own drinks. Bring your own food.
Bring your own Rolex to donate to me.
$1,000 to start up the spa for 10 minutes.
Yeah, gosh. I don't know. I just feel like social events with friends are not meant to be monetized. But that.
Mm-hmm. But now imagine this. Okay, let's just say it's $100,000 a ticket, 15 tickets, and all of it goes to charity.
I mean,
that's make some money and donate the money to charity at that point.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I mean, I was more warm to that idea. Mm-hmm. If you're going to donate it,
yeah,
but it would have to probably like make sense for you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I don't know. I
the charity is my bank account, by the way.
I don't know. You know, it's people gave me so much crap. I posted on Instagram and I said like, "Hey, I'm arriving at this airport. Can anyone pick me up and drive me to my destination?"
Yeah.
And there were people there who complained. I can't believe you would ask somebody to go and drive you like that. You have so much money. Just pay for an Uber. This is horrible. Like, and I was like, what? Like, this is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
Where meanwhile, I got like 50 responses to be like, yeah, I'll be there. And every single time, I've probably done this like 10 times. Every single time, I've made a new friend. We've had a fantastic time. And just to hang out, meet a new person. Obviously, like I'll get food and gas and stuff like that, but it reminds, I don't know. It's, I guess in the sense of like having a subscriber or like having someone who watches the channel, like every person I met has been so like cool and nice and just friendly.
Yeah.
We've kept in touch. And now it's like, if I go to, you know, Florida, I've got a guy now just going to hang out. And I called him the other night on the podcast to get his thoughts on something.
I wish I had that mindset, because I think that's a really healthy mindset. I don't have that mindset. My mindset's like, if I ask somebody for a favor, I'm going to be obligated to like spend time with that person. And what if like that person's weird, or like we don't get along? It's a risk that sometimes I'm like, is that really worth taking the risk to save $10? Like,
well, it's not about the money savings. It's just like you get a fantastic experience.
Yeah,
I knock on wood, I have out of maybe a dozen, two dozen times, I had zero negative experiences.
Yeah.
But I do also think it's important to talk a little bit beforehand. So like sometimes I'll you know, talk back and forth, hop on a quick call sometimes and just like, hey, does this work with you? I just want to make sure you're good with it.
I think the amount of time you'll spend vetting and doing all that is just time better spent to just get an Uber.
Think of the memories. Think of the memories you get. I met such cool people.
I got mugged.
Yeah.
I'll remember this for life.
No. But like the Orlando example was this guy, Jesse Wolf, who was on Shark Tank. Okay. And so he was telling me about his experience on Shark Tank and his business. And like, I'm learning things from him.
Yeah. No, I think that's really cool. That's a really healthy mindset. I would love to learn to do that more and be more open.
But I just like this.
I think when it comes to the wedding, I think for me though, because of maybe our net worths, it would just feel like weird for us to do it. But maybe if you're different, then
maybe so bad. If you're open to keeping, I mean, if you're open to bringing your family kind of in the light like that, then I could understand it.
Mm.
For me, I've always tried to keep those two divided,
right?
Like, you know, the social media life and the family life. But I mean, at some point, it starts to become like Kardashians, right? And I know they always look at that and they're like, oh man, they monetize their kids and like, you know, from the time they're born, they're just a monetization piece. They all got super rich off that though.
Right.
So, you know, but that's their own choice. My own choice is my own choice, and somebody else's might be somebody else's.
It just depends on your priorities.
Exactly. Yeah.
And Alex, what you could do is like the full send meta card. Except it's an invitation to your wedding. Like
we're not doing NFT.
You get an NFT.
Just buy a ticket
of Alex and his wife. And then like 10 of those, like the premier ones, if you're on the white list, you get the one to the
I'm going
to
sell each of my wedding photos as an individual NFT. And if you have the one of my first kiss, then you're going to double your investment.
Oh my God. You could do that. I mean, obviously you're not going to do it, but that would be hilarious to NFT your first kiss wedding picture. Oh my God.
No, I think that's
really
cool though. Yeah. But I don't know.
Yeah,
I wouldn't do it for me.
Yeah, so if I did it, would you still come to my wedding?
I would.
Jeremy. Be real. It's okay, you're Jeremy. It's okay, be real.
Questionable.
Okay.
50-50. If Jack's there, though, then my odds of going go up to 90%.
Jack will be there.
Yeah, I think Jack will be there.
Oh, so 90%. Yeah.
Then I'm not coming. No,
yeah. 90% the other way. 90% I'm not going to be there.
And Graham's like, I'm 50-50.
In all reality,
I would ask for a cut of the tickets. I
did. Oh, yeah, right, that sounds like Graham. There,
but I need 50% of tickets.
Because sales. It was
your idea. Yeah, I was going to say it was your idea to begin with. Oh, but gosh. I did ask Kelsey just like just to gauge what she thought about it, and to my surprise, she actually said that would be okay. She said her mom might be a little peeved, but I mean,
so what would happen to the money that her mom gifted you guys?
No, all that, she's not giving me any money. Like, she wants to, like, I guess the requirement is that if she gives me money, and it's not like a lot of, to be honest, it's not a lot of money, but the requirement is I have this money set aside because I wanted my daughter to have a wedding that she wants to have. And it's not a lot of money again. And so, yeah, that money, just pretend it doesn't exist. Pretend like the wedding is almost free. I might have to pay a little bit out of pocket, but yeah. So then I would sell tickets to the wedding.
I think I follow.
Imagine everyone tickets as a name tag on because you don't know who they are.
And if you want to be seated at the Graham table, there's a premium ad.
Oh my God, they got to get the real NFT.
Jeez. No, I wouldn't do that. I just thought that the ticket thing was a funny idea for, like, if I did a YouTube video or something, like, you know. I don't know. I sold tickets to my wedding, or I monetized my wedding, something stupid. But
yeah, Alex was sharing how much it was to get married at one of the local casinos here, and it was way more expensive than I thought. And I said, for that price, for actually half the cost, you rent an amazing Airbnb, like a 5,000 square foot house somewhere in Las Vegas or the surrounding areas. You cater for $3,000, maybe another $2,000 for miscellaneous photographer, DJ, stuff like that. So you're in it for, let's say, $10,000 less than what it costs at a casino, and it's way better, and you could spend the night at the house if you wanted to.
Do you have a budget for a wedding if you get married?
It's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be that much. I mean, first of all, I can't fathom spending like $50,000 on a wedding. Like, I would prefer just like a small, like, if it were up to me, like something really small, just nice and, okay. You know.
Do you have a budget in mind?
I don't know, like $20,000? I mean, I can't see it being more than that. Even $20,000 to me, because I see that as just like that's a lot of money, and it like I still have not gotten over the hurdle. Like $20,000 is still $20,000. So plus it's like I like something a little smaller and more intimate to me. That it's better. That's just me. Yeah, one side of things.
I tend to agree. My girlfriend Corey, she used to be a wedding coordinator, so I'll leave it up to her to decide. Ooh.
Yeah, I'm happy. I got married when I didn't have that much money. I probably had like a net worth of like $200,000.
That's the real secret.
Yeah. I mean, when you know, the more money you have, it's like the more the expectation of, like, one, the more money you have, the more people you know.
Right.
I have a lot more friends and people I know now that I would be like, shit, if I don't invite them to my wedding, they're going to feel some kind of way. Andre. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Alex. Oh, Graham.
That's why you should charge tickets so they can pay for it. If they want to show up.
Let's see who my real friends are.
No, I'm just like as you accumulate, as you start to get to know people, it's like, crap, man. Now it's like, got to invite all these people. And it's like, if I don't invite this person, but I invite this person, they're going to judge me, or they're going to think like, I don't like them or something like that. And so, and every person you add to a wedding, the cost goes up. And depending upon how expensive that wedding is, my wedding, the whole thing with the dress, the rings, everything that went into that, less than $10,000.
Nice.
Less than $10,000.
With inflation, what is that?
Probably 30, a couple million. Yeah. You know?
30,000 inflation.
But for me, I had a net worth of maybe 175K, 200K. So even that money spending, let's say, you know, between everything. Yeah, it was still a good amount.
Percentage-wise, 5% of net worth is still 5% of net worth.
Yeah. And some people spend more on their wedding than they probably even have a net worth. Right. You know what I mean? And that's also like some people, their parents paid. My parents didn't pay anything, and from my other side didn't either. So, Yeah, I the expectations, man, it goes up when you get more money and you get more friends and more acquaintances, and it's like, oh gosh, geez, yeah. Man. Wait till you got to figure out that list of like, okay, who gets invited and who doesn't get invited. Wait till you figure out that list.
We have a list right now, and yep. We added plus ones and everything, and we're under 40. So,
oh, I forgot 40. About plus ones. Those exist.
Yeah. Oh, what yeah. about you invite me? You invite my kids too? Are they allowed to come?
You know what, Jeremy? We actually talked about that, yeah, Jeremy. We talked about that, and we're like, well, what if we do like a kid-free wedding? Yeah. But then I'm like, yeah. But Jeremy's kids are like next door, you know? I'm like, you know, but then if it's like, we're trying to be fair, you know? Yeah. It's like, and you know what else came up that was a little bit awkward?
Yep.
My mother-in-law wanted to invite people. And oh. I was like, I don't want people I don't know at my wedding, unless they're paying.
In all seriousness, Graham, have fun when you get married. You probably know more people than anybody.
There's gonna be a lot of offended people.
Yeah, the whole Selling Sunset crew coming, or what's going on with that?
I don't know. I don't know. I think they would, because
they bring the film crew and everything.
We've been to three of their weddings.
Okay,
three. Yeah.
So I think you're going to end up realizing that the wedding thing is such a daunting task that instead of keeping under like a $20,000 budget, what you're going to do is you're going to go over the top, and then you're going to justify it by like, well, it's okay, I'm spending 300 grand because I'm going to profit 310 or whatever. You're going to find
I joked about that
in the past, and I can no longer joke about that. So
I will gladly sell out FTX. If you want to buy my cake, buy my wife's wedding, just please reach out. Please reach out.
Graham is going to have legit sponsors. Trust me. Like in the middle of a vow, like, we interrupt to bring you this message from.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm not.
Try carrot.
The diamond ring. Gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Oh goodness. But anyways, yeah, that's a whole subject in itself. Oh boy, dark hole there. So
anyway,
where do we take it from here?
What are you buying this week, Jeremy? I saw you bought some stocks today.
I did. I bought Chef, as always. I bought Honest. I bought Oatly. I bought PayPal.
Same stocks.
Yeah.
Are you?
I did buy some Amazon for the first time a few days ago. So that's a new stock for me.
Do you invest in any index funds?
No. Zero.
Really?
Not.
Does any part of you feel like
10%? Nope.
No.
Not even 1%. No, because in this sort of market, let's be clear, this is that market where everybody's like, index funds, this is why you need to be buying index funds. And I understand that. Yeah. Like, because index funds have held up far better than growth stocks. Let's just be honest. Most of these growth stocks are down 50, 60, 70, 80%. Yeah. And so in this sort of market, people are like, the S&P 500 is only down 13%. And that's fair. Mm. But most of the time, you're not in a bear market. Right now, we're in a bear market. The NASDAQ's down 22%. The Russell's down 23% as of recording this. It might get worse. We'll see. Most of the time, that's not the market. And so you get these incredible opportunities. Like this year, to me, represents an acquisition year. I'm not buying real estate. I don't care about cars. I don't care about watches. I don't care about any of that this year. This year, stocks. And that's just my entire year. I'm just buying stocks. I get my YouTube pay, stocks, baby. Millennial Money pay, stocks. I don't get paid for Millennial Money. We need to figure that out that someday. But anyways, it's like, dude, that's my focus this year. And so I don't know, are you guys not tempted? Because I know you guys are kind of like the index funds and you put a certain amount. Are you not tempted seeing these prices on stocks to be like, I got to pick up some PayPal at $80 a share. No. Facebook, no, at $170.
I'm not, because I look at that and I think there is a small chance that it could half, that it could go down another 50%.
Another 50%.
I think there's a small chance. So if anything, it makes me feel more comfortable with index funds because, you know, obviously there are the days, I guess I'm more risk adverse because when I see the bad days, I am more likely to buy index funds. On the good days, I see like, oh man, I don't want to say coinbase.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me say it again. Stocks. Hold on. On the good days when I'm like, oh man, I see Ford up 15% today and my index fund is up 1.3. Oh, I should have bought Ford. It's tempting, but I think in the long run, just the stress-free of just like, I'm just going to buy it. If it goes down, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah,
I prefer that. But that's me. I couldn't handle the volatility because it would impact me to see that big of a price swing.
Yeah, on a percentage basis is what you're mainly talking about. Yeah, I can understand that.
I struggle between index funds like broad markets like VOO and dividend yielders like SPHD, VYM.
Yeah.
When I see like a yield of like 4%, 5%, I'm like, oh my God, these are such fat dividend yields. I want to plow a ton of money into that. So
yeah,
I looked at my dividend ETFs and stocks. They have held up so well and they're just still paying money on top of making dollars on top of your dollars. You're still making quarterly or monthly income. I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
And what's Bitcoin at right now?
38, I think.
Bitcoin's held up
incredibly well, better than tech stocks.
But
imagine living in a world where like the risky volatile asset that's Bitcoin is holding up stronger than tech stocks.
That was like that in the beginning of the COVID shutdown. I remember Bitcoin was $9,000. Everything else was taken off. Bitcoin was like $9,999. It just the entire time.
Yeah.
And then it just took off.
Yeah.
I like, I'm not betting on this necessarily, but as someone who buys crypto like almost daily at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if we hit 38 for a very long time and then just all of a sudden runs up out of nowhere. So It's too new to tell.
Well, I think there's also two ways to look at Bitcoin. One is Bitcoin's down far more than the S&P 500, far more than the NASDAQ and the Russell. So I think we should consider that from its highs, right?
Let me see.
I mean, Bitcoin topped out at, what was it, 67,000, 69,000? And if it's at 38, you know, that's not quite a 50% fall, but approaching it.
Is it fair to look at the all-time high versus...
That's what people look at.
Versus the volatility. Just in general.
Okay, so yeah, year over year, it's down 30%.
Yeah.
But pretty soon the year over year is going to be up because we were at the peak. Right now, a year ago today, it was 55.
That wasn't the peak, though. The peak was like 67, 69 I think November or summer? But anyways, so I think that's one important thing.
November 12th, 2021.
Yeah. And that's right around the same time the NASDAQ peaked and the Russell peaked and growth stocks peaked, which was interesting. But the second thing is, and I don't think people pay attention to this. We know who's sponsoring this video, FTX, right? Think about the amount of money crypto companies across the board, I won't mention any of the names, everybody is spending so much money advertising right now, right? That's obviously unsustainable long term. Every time I watch a sports something, this arena is sponsored by this crypto company or they're sponsoring in the background and they're spending so much money right now. And with that, all that money they're spending, we still can't get Bitcoin to go up. It's still going down. What happens if you would take away all this insane amount of advertising and all this, you get free crypto if you spend $10 of free crypto? What would happen to the market if that was a situation?
I think it would just stay flat.
I don't think the marketing is translating to a higher price.
Yeah.
I think the marketing is strictly for eyeballs, brand awareness, and with so much competition out there, I think maybe only three are really going to like stick around and be like the,
it's all
the
just
big ones.
Customer acquisition.
Yeah.
So I don't think if ads stop that people are going to all of a sudden start selling Bitcoin. Like, I don't think it would translate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously there's always sellers in the market, right? There's always sellers for Bitcoin like there is every stock and in the market in general. But right now, if you have so much money being spent on advertising that says basically, hey, come buy Bitcoin, right? You know, that's going to attract people to platforms. They might buy $50.
But to be fair, are the ads more about buy Bitcoin or more about come to our platform?
Yeah. So if you come to their platform, what are you doing? You're buying Bitcoin.
There's so many different options out there.
Bitcoin, give me a break.
Yeah, Bitcoin,
no one's going to buy some weird crypto.
I would argue more people are buying the weird cryptos. Seriously.
Because they're cheaper and they're getting free cryptos. That's why they're there. They're like, I could sign up. I get $10 of the Dogecoin. Heck yeah.
I would love to see the breakdown of how many people will sign up for a platform like FTX down below in the description, buy Bitcoin, or they buy an obscure one. I would almost venture to say that a decent amount are going for the obscure ones because it's more accessible. I remember, man, like 2 years ago, buying some of these altcoins was impossible. Like you have to sign up on one exchange and then buy this one thing. You take Bitcoin and you convert it to this and you have to move it to another exchange and like convert it to this and you have to buy this stupid thing. Now it's as easy as like, hey, make a deposit, a normal deposit, buy this thing and there it is.
So if that was the case, why aren't those cryptos moving? We don't hear about any cryptos.
They're not promoting the cryptos.
They're promoting the platforms.
Yeah, but you guys are saying if people come to this platform, they're going to buy some weird crypto, right? And they're not going to not buy Bitcoin. But
imagine there are 50, 60 different options that you could buy.
Yeah.
With a whole bunch of different brokerages. Their advertising, I do not believe, is going to have a significant impact on the supply and demand of random altcoins.
Right.
Yeah, because I think if somebody signs up for a brokerage, they're going to buy Bitcoin. But, I mean, that's a different opinion. Everybody can have a different opinion. But I think
a lot of people will. I think also a lot of people come there for the free, like, promotion, right? Whatever it is, like, oh, $5 a Dogecoin, cool.
Yeah.
And maybe some substantial amount just sign up and then never do anything with their account. It just sits there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but we didn't see, like, I would argue TikTok was probably one of the biggest generators for free crypto advertising. Mm. Yeah. And when you saw TikTok ban any sort of crypto videos, where they did for like 4 months.
Oh,
we didn't see any impact on prices.
When was this? I didn't even know about that.
Well, I don't know when the ban happened, but I remember Dogecoin skyrocketed for the first time from TikTok.
It was from TikTok, yeah. Mm. They had a problem with some of their videos going mad viral because people would say like, hey guys, if we all just buy this one thing we hold it, we put this amount in, as long as 25 million of you see this video, do this, we're going to hit this price, and we'll make tens of thousands of dollars to share this with your friends. But the algorithm would like give it everything. So in a way, TikTok was promoting whatever that video was towards that specific coin. That's where I think the problem is. I think YouTube's going to get there eventually. I think YouTube is going to go after specific stocks because their algorithms are the ones that are promoting that content. Mm. And now, in a way, they'll be held responsible for disseminating content towards a specific investment that might not be good.
Mm.
I think so. But I've been saying this for like years. It's only a matter of time.
We'll just have to have a lot more disclosures, probably, is the end result of it. I don't think YouTube's going to require people to get, like, you know, licenses.
No, I don't think a license, but it's going to be their algorithm. It's going to be like, hey, you're promoting content that promotes this.
Right.
So therefore, you're promoting this. You got to fix this.
Yeah.
And so their easy answer is not like, okay, guys, you got to do disclaimers. Their easy answer is, all right, well, we're not going to promote it. Like, that's the easiest approach.
Yeah,
it's going to be so hard to do.
YouTube's algorithm is so much different than TikTok and so much more sophisticated, in my personal opinion, than TikTok. I think TikTok's a much easier platform to go viral on right now because the algorithm's very, very new. I think YouTube's just a totally different animal, you know? So, like, for instance, I don't think there's necessarily stocks that are built on the back of YouTube. I think YouTube channels can be built on it. So if we look at like the GameStop, AMC movement and things like that, it wasn't built off YouTube. It was really built off Reddit, Wall Street Bets, and then some YouTube channels built around that. And they built, at least in the short term, successful YouTube channels in the short term around AMC.
People are
GameStop
not finding that
like
channel
that
from Reddit. The community existed on Reddit and they've taken it to YouTube, but YouTube, through their algorithms, connected that video with people who would be impacted by it or would be agreeable to it, susceptible to that.
Yeah.
Or more realistically, it attracted the people who were to click on the video, like the person, subscribe, and then get recommended more content.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So, I would just say it's going to take one bad event, like one really mega bad fad or like something to hurt a lot of people financially.
Well, that's this what I think. Economic crisis we're about to go through.
No, I would say it has to be like sinister. I do not believe it would be, hey, the market's down 50%, the Fed tightened too fast. No, I think it has to be something where it's like a BitConnect, where it's like a blatant scam.
You mean like
it's malicious?
Like a safe move?
I think YouTube keeps an eye out for that stuff. I bet you YouTube has people on payroll who just keep an eye out for that, along with a lot of other stuff. Yeah,
I'm sure. So. But if something is so, like, BitConnect was pretty popular.
And
but.
What I think YouTube, the more views videos get and the more subscribers the channel gets, I think the more YouTube checks out that and keeps an eye on it. I bet you they have some sort of threshold that once a video gets like 10,000 views, look into this. 100,000 views, look into this. Because of all the scrutiny they went through back when we were just starting on the platforms and stuff like that.
Maybe.
So
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. But, so with this market crash we're going through right now, I mean, it's pretty devastating. I mean, when you look at the list of stocks, you look at Netflix. Netflix is down 70%, 70% from its highs. You look at Shopify, down 75% plus. You know, think about you invested $100,000 in that stock. You know, you've got maybe a couple hundred thousand left, 300,000 or something. Okay. Or no, excuse me, 300,000, 20,000 or 30,000, right? And I mean, that's pretty darn devastating. Never mind. And we're only down 22% of the NASDAQ.
Hmm. But so. What's crazy is that when you look at some of these, and I hate to be like that fear monger, but I'm just saying, when you compare that to the dot-com bubble, and you and like everyone's like, you overlay the charts and it fits. You know, but when you look at a company like Cisco, you can't help but worry that, you know, were things boosted to, and obviously the answer is yes, based on now. I mean, they're boosted to these valuations that were not sustainable. How long is it going to take to recover? And could you end up with a situation like Cisco where it skyrockets and then nothing? Or even a company, great company like Amazon, or any of those companies that are on today.
That that's interesting. We're a huge point where investors pull out in the future from companies that don't make any money. Because I feel like there was such a run up and such speculation on companies that weren't even profitable yet, where people were putting these insane valuations. So if this bubble were to hypothetically bust, right, would people ever get into that mania of like, let's dump insane amounts of money into companies that haven't even proven themselves yet?
It takes a while. You know, eventually you get back into that cycle, but it usually takes a while because then people get scared. And so now like the movement is like, you know, flood to it's cash or mind, in index funds.
Yeah.
And then eventually you start hearing these stories about somebody became a crypto millionaire and it's like, oh, I gotta buy that next Doge, man. Where's that next Doge at, or the next stock or whatever? It takes a while. You eventually get there. But yeah, I mean, the list of stocks I know of. And the thing is, it's one thing when it was like small cap stocks or like some unprofitable companies. A lot of these companies that are falling dramatically now are not those sorts of companies. Even Google's gone into bear market now. You know, that one's down 20%+. NVIDIA's down 41% from its
Amazon
highs.
Down?
Amazon's not. Amazon might only be down. Yeah, it's not. It's not down crazy, but Amazon also hasn't moved in almost 2 years. As far as the stock price was, its stock price was higher than today.
27 is right now.
It's down
year
27.
Year to date, though, it's down 18%.
Okay, yeah,
that's
and its peak was about 35.
So I don't know if you guys saw or not, but now that I'm part of the silver community as a silver investor, I see a lot of different stuff that I haven't seen. So recently, the Federal Reserve Building, they put a big fence around it that hasn't been there usually when it's got barbed wire at the top of it and whatnot. And so the I don't want to call it a conspiracy, but the theory is that Fed's going to crash the economy. They're going to keep raising rates while the economy gets worse and worse. Everybody's going to look at the Fed, blame the Fed. You caused me to lose my job. I don't know if you guys just saw Robinhood just cut jobs. They just cut 9% of their workforce. Wells Fargo cut mortgage bankers. Like, you know, it could be starting. We'll see. Let's hope that doesn't happen. Real estate could get into a bad situation, especially in the back half of this year going into 23. D.R. Horton just reported their home orders already started down 10%. And this is like the last quarter. Never mind what's going to happen next quarter. So we could be potentially in a situation where we end up in a major recession. And everybody's going to look at the Fed and be like, you're the one that caused this because you keep raising interest rates. You're not helping the markets out. And
that's a fair point.
People start losing their jobs and they're like, look at you, Fed.
I wonder if that's a lot to extrapolate from just putting up a fence.
I've
heard an alternative theory.
Okay.
The alternative theory is that the barbed wire fence is made of silver. And they were like, how do we put this to use?
We have so much of it and it's so readily available that we need to do something with it. Silver's down, by the way. I've seen like 7% over the last month.
Well, problem. When you get into an everything crash, remember we talked about everything bubble?
Yeah.
I think even silver's going to fall and I'm going to lose, I'll probably lose value.
But that's why cash, does such a great job.
And that's the problem. Inflation's eating away your cash. So you're like, okay,
but it's better.
Now you can make an argument that maybe it's better to keep cash.
I would rather keep cash and have inflation than buy something else that goes down 7% and have inflation.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, obviously time will kind of tell, but now leads us to a question. Is it the time to move to cash? Because, you know, if you're in an everything,
it's funny
drop.
Because I'm seeing like Graham put out a video, I think a couple of weeks ago, was like, stop saving, right? And so it's like, inflation.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm the opposite of like, start saving. Just like,
honestly, this could be interchangeable depending on like the video concept.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm the same amount of cash. If we do hit like a really tough time like that, I remember like that's how what helped me get started. I mean, that's where I really began investing, seeing all of that. And I think it's just going to be fantastic opportunities. I think the best thing to do, probably not keep too much cash, but like the 6-month emergency fund, boost up to 9 if you're paranoid. My biggest thing is stay employed. Mm-hmm. Be employable. Be like the best person you can so that you're indispensable, so that if something were to happen and the company you work for, like let's just say their revenue splits 50%, you want to be that person that's like, no, we can't let them go. They're so mm-hmm. good. They're so integral that we have to keep them on.
Right. Yeah.
Because that's you got to think point. The worst case scenario is we hit a recession, prices go down, and you lose your job. As long as you have a job, as long as you have income coming in, you're able to buy the dip, keep your expenses taken care of, like that's it. Stay employed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough thing. And it's like a deleveraging of everything. Everything drops and everything gets worse. And then even when it comes to investments, people sometimes have to pull out money to live off of that was invested money. And that's a tough situation. Like imagine, let's say you got $10,000 in Bitcoin. You're like, dude, I need that $10,000 to like live on for the next few months because I lost my job or whatever.
Do you think May is going to be really bad? Because, you know, typically May is not a good month for investors. Sell in May, go away that big.
I don't even want to go there. I can't even predict that. I mean, it's just,
Why is that? It's because investors are going on vacation and
they sell their investments to fund.
Yeah. And I think there's a bigger belief right now in the market personally. This is what I think is big money is looking at the market and they're like, dude, the Fed's not coming to save the day. The market can keep dropping and the Fed is so hell-bent on we're raising rates, we're going to try to tick down inflation that they could potentially crash the economy and be late to that game as they were late before. They were way late in raising rates. They should have been raising rates way faster. They shouldn't have pumped nearly as much money as they did. They went way overboard, right? And now they could be in a situation where the economy could literally be crashing and they'll still be in denial and be like, no, we're still raising rates or we're not lowering rates or we're not doing anything to help out the situation because we're trying to battle inflation down.
If there is a crash, I think it'll happen either middle of next year or end of next year. Just because when 2020 happened and they dropped the rates to zero, how long did it take for us to feel the full force of inflation this year, like this month, these past few months?
That's the dangerous part, is that we're not going to know the level of inflation for like another 6 months. Like to really
everything
feel the effects
lags.
Of today is probably 6 to 12 months from now,
right?
So they're making these adjustments right now blindfolded, just hoping, all right, let's hit this target, but we don't know, we're going to try to get as close as we can,
right?
Yeah. In real estate, that's another lagging thing. You're looking at a lot of times data that's a month or two behind. And so you can see a company's earnings and it's like, oh, last quarter was really good for them. But it's like, how many people are going in to place those new home orders right now?
That's 7% interest.
Yeah.
No, or that's
well,
seven.
No.
It's 6.8, right?
No, we're in the fives still on average.
No, it's 6.8. No.
Well, they're talking.
Maybe that's not average, but I've seen them as
well. I have not. Yeah. I mean, you have to be maybe a low subprime borrower.
Right.
Rates are high.
Might go higher.
Stocks are down, might go lower.
Might go higher.
Might go higher too. So the one thing you could do is get your free crypto down below in the description with FTX US. FTX US.
And stay away from Jeremy because he's going to get you sick.
And subscribe. Hit the like button. Let us know your thoughts down below in the comment section. We read all the comments, by the way. So if you want to say something, let us know what you think, what your thoughts are on this. Just type down below. Enjoy. Thank you.
And make sure you smash time,
the like button. See
ya. This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.